And now, System Mastery sings The Weapons of the World.
Longsword and dagger and shortsword and rapier, gladius, lockaber, axe. Bastard sword, falchion, kopesh, two-handed swords, vihander, and scramsy axe. Dwarven war axe and battle axe, and also throwing axe, orc double axe with two blades. Bident and harpoon and trident and spontoon, glaive, keysarm, halberd, and glaive. There's partisan, bardician, speedum, guisarm, fools, forshard, long spear, naginata. Bohemian, earspoon, and lucerne hammer, military, fork, and katana. Warhammer, morningstar, kukri, and scimitar, quarterstaff, great club, and flail. Shortbow and longbow, staff sling and crossbow, whip pick and cat of nine tails. Chakram and shuriken, mangash and knife, and then spike chain and science assistus. Gnomish took hammer, pike sap and javelin, sickle and arquebus. There's urgrosh and double sword, nunchaku, wanacord, brass knuckles, back alley brawls. The mordenkrad, wrist razors, bolas and double flails, elalat, tricol and maul. Nodachi, tetsubo, tanto and chokuno, waki, jasi and kama. Tanfa and yari, manriki, kusari, kunai, kusari, gama. Hooksword and guandao, chain weapon, jamadao, wonder, fire wheels and monk spade. Meteor hammer and butterfly daggers, dragon beard hook and dao blades. There's claymore and saber and broadsword and razor, scourge bayonet and shamshir. Mancatcher, rancer, and then back to corban and poleaxe, bill, war scythe, and spear. Horseman's pick, hatchet, adds, cutlass, a scream, a stick, shulin, the andi, fo, oti. Scepter and tomahawk, taiaha, a big rock, and the kaioketsu shogi. Shotel and ono, crowbell and tombo, makaho, waddle, and pata. Deerhorn, knives, ninja, toe, crop, and then sukubo, sword, scythe, and then tewa, tewa. There's boomerangs, yo-yos, and repeating crossbows, umumi, bayonet, and lasso. Flambers and warflam, blowgun, addle, addle, and sling, parry, and dagger, catter, and crack, comer, caracal, bastard, so spice, shield, and double sword, full blaze, and gauntlets, and net.
All right, welcome back to Afterthought. I am your co-host, Jeff. With me, as always, your other co-host, John. John, how are you this week?
I am so good, so mostly wet from the rain. Everything's great here in California.
This tiny, tiny amount of piddly rain that doesn't count as real weather for anyone else. And for comment on how we're big babies about the rain, we're joined by a special guest this week, James D'Amato of One Shot and Campaign Podcast.
And I am an expert on rain.
Yeah.
And this is not much.
Yeah, this is nothing, right?
This is not enough to save your state.
Yeah, and we're big babies, and we should go ahead and just keep barbecuing outside.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is barbecue weather.
It's beach weather out here.
Actually, I love going to the beach in the rain.
It's really?
It's not crowded, and once you're in the water, what, are you going to get cold? It's fine.
I guess it's true.
Yeah, the only thing is your beach towel kind of gets wet, but otherwise, I am all about getting to that beach in the rain.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm only happy when it rains, so...
Man, you're just never happy. That's probably... Is that why you moved to Southern California, so you had an excuse to be depressed?
Yeah, that is my excuse.
So, Afterthought is the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and talk about topics of interest related to our most recent review show, our most recent System Mastery. This time, John, what did we cover?
We covered Cyberworld.
Thanks for reminding me.
A LARP that is too many rules and not enough lowercase letters or editors.
And only one person on the entire construction crew. It was Jeffrey S. Waters.
Yeah, Jeffrey Swatters.
Who wrote, edited, created the concept of... Although,
created the concept of for a cyberpunk game that already...
Our intrepid research team that we sort of take advantage of over at Something Awful immediately pointed out that the game is a ripoff of two other games at once. Like, just... It has the exact same cover as Cyberpunk 2020, right down to the sidebar, and it looks like an old Chilton's Auto Manual guide. I've been saying that for a long time.
Oh, that's amazing.
But so does Cyberpunk 2020, and it uses the Mind's Eye Theater rule set. It's just two games at once.
And they just tried to slap all of the, like, the guns and the cybernetics and everything, all of the rules that you would have from Cyberpunk 2020 into a LARP.
Yeah, and then add in a bunch of... And then you can head out to space, I guess, although...
Technically, we've mastered faster-than-light travel. This doesn't matter for the setting at all.
No, the whole game is supposed to be set in, like, gritty, seedy, back-alley neighborhoods and tall cyber corporations. And then also jungles on Neptune, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if you want those jungles on Neptune.
That's one of the... James, unfortunately, hadn't read the book, but one of the settings is that they have early on they colonized the planet of Neptune, not the moons of Neptune.
The planet, the gas giant.
Yes, the gas giant that is.
And we must have known that at the time, right?
Yeah, the book's from like 1992.
Yeah, I was going to say this is like early to mid 90s.
I think we knew Neptune was a gas giant like in the late 1800s, but But no, that they were like, no, we'll colonize. I don't know if they don't mention how they do it. They do mention there's jungles and stuff. So that even that precludes the whole, you know, oh, it's just that mining thing on Bespin.
Right.
Yeah, you can't even get away with that.
Well, maybe they're floating jungles.
That could be. Floating jungles of Neptune would actually be a really good 60s sci-fi book.
And that's exact. And what I want to do with that immediately, I'm just feeling it instinctually, is LARP it.
Hey, our podcast has just been joined by a beautiful rainbow.
Ooh, aww. Take that, Pence.
So, I'm not really sure what the topic for a discussion this week really needs to be.
Based on that, I was actually going to mention the idea of burying the lead in role-playing games, where in something like Cyberworld, you have this, we've mastered faster-than-light travel, there's like jungles on Neptune, we've got all of this crazy stuff going on in space, and they're like, oh, but you're probably going to be like some guy scrabbling for like scraps wearing tires as shoulder pads and running around the Mad Max cyberpunk future.
That's a good point. That's a really solid point. A lot of role-playing settings come out of the gate with really big ideas, and they want you to play the smallest people.
Yeah, you've got, I think we'd mentioned this on Fifth Cycle, where the whole thing is like, there's all of these like weird magic schools, and they're all archaeologists, and they're competing for magic items and stuff. And then they're like, "Oh, well, what do you do? I don't know. You're some schlub.
You're a town guard.
You're a dirt farmer, as you always are."
Yeah, there's a lot of games that make that mistake. The other thing I thought was really funny about this game for me was the inability to predict the future of computing when it comes to old role playing games. Because this one had I broke it down on the episode itself, but they mentioned the computer of the future, like the basic Case Decker computer of the future. Oh, no opaque keyboard where you can't even see what you're typing because you're so good at hacking in the net. And you jack in with your forehead amplifier thing, and it's got 4 million bytes of memory, which is less than a 5.25-inch floppy disk has.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of sci-fi is they end up either saying, like, this is set in the far future of the year 2000, or they end up going, like, okay, what's a larger thing that we've got now? The future computers have 2 terabytes, and you're like, okay, great.
I don't really want to bash on role-playing games for that, because that's a tradition in
oh, that's sci-fi.
Johnny Mnemonic, I mean, thinking of that. How many megabytes did he have in his goddamn brain before it started failing?
It was like 512. He had less megabytes of information in him than like an encyclopedia in Carta.
Which, I mean, still believable.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a lot of memory to have in your brain, which is not designed to hold computer memory. But
I meant for Keanu Reeves.
Oh yeah, no. No, and then you know the first Alien movie where everyone is flying around in space with 1970 style CRT monitors.
But I still believe that because if you look at any like bank computer or something like that, it's old as hell.
Oh yeah, no, that's true.
And I'm sure NASA buys their computers secondhand from banks. So
that could make sense, or Weyland-Yutani.
You can always make the excuse that in space, these old type of computers work better. They're like, oh, if you're in space for a long haul mining mission, then LCD, oh, it goes to shit. You gotta have CRT.
Yeah, you know what happens. Unfortunately, if your ship is exposed to the vacuum of space, you know what's safe? Vacuum tubes. Nothing's gonna happen to those. They've already got vacuum in them. They're fine. So maybe you gotta scrape out some pilot chunks, but on the other hand, you still got a perfectly functional ship.
And that's all Weyland-Yutani cares about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, bearing the lead, John, what else do you think? What other games are there?
So, I mean, I'm trying to think. Other than, like, Fifth Cycle, any of the ones, particularly sci-fi, are the ones that usually do this. Because with fantasy, you usually get the idea of, oh, there's a whole world out there, and you need to go be the person that slays the dragon or the person who finds the artifacts or whatever. But in sci-fi, there's a lot of points where, like, Blue Planet or whatever, where they talk about, oh, there's this alien species, and they're so weird, and they're sort of like humans, but they're different from us, and there's a weird, like, under-the-water mystery to solve. But then all the rest of the book is like, you're probably going to be working for a corporation doing mining, and you're like, why? What? Why would you give me this rad setting and then go, you're probably going to be some schlub?
I feel like that is such a role-playing thing, though. It does show up so often in fantasy that they want you to play the dirt farmer, like especially on games that you guys review.
Oh yeah, where verisimilitude is king. Yeah,
I think it ties heavily into the fact that OD&D, like, and all the OSR stuff is about being lethal because they want you to create the interesting character and interesting story through actually lucky rolls. Like, yes. They actually want you to have rolled the unlikely probability to lead you to the story, which, you know, I can't say that they're wrong, but I will say it does not make for a super great role-playing game. We all love the story of rising from nothing to be the big hero, but if you're depending on dice to beat the odds, you're going to be disappointed.
It comes down to a couple different factors that work against you. A Horatio Alger story is really nice.
Oh, yeah.
People like those, and they were really popular when they were a real thing, but a D&D game has to be at least four Horatio Alger stories happening at once.
Yeah. Well, it's the problem of everyone's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, Luke Skywalker started out and he was just a moisture farmer and then he turned into an amazing Jedi. And you're like, yeah.
He was also a good pilot.
However, even then, you look at it and you go, but if he was relying on random chance instead of a storyline, he goes into Mos Eisley and gets shot by Buttchin.
Or like a universal force that is guiding him towards destiny, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
He would have died like the third time he had to make a drive check in the T-38.
That's he's like, I'm going to bullseye this womp rat. Nope, I got a two.
I originally envisioned this film having Luke turn the key to his speeder and the converter tubes just exploding. That's what I wanted, but we couldn't afford the explosion, so we told the Star Wars story instead.
And that, of course, is why we're releasing this new special edition where Luke Skywalker dies in the first 5 minutes and is replaced by a Gungan.
His uncle was really going to regret not letting him get those power converters at Tashi Station. He was very right about needing those.
So, for me, one of the common ones is when a game is supposed to be a grim, gritty, like, or just very realistic game set on Earth and is about, you know, standard humans. I'd say a good example for me would be like Panty Explosion, which is, this is a schoolgirl simulator game. But then the lead that's buried is, oh, there's psychics in this, and they can blow up heads.
And you have to have a psychic.
Yes, one of your girls has to be psychic.
And there has to be a demon.
Yeah.
Always.
It's more like they just kind of hit a gaming convention wall, where they were like, well, okay, we're going to make a schoolgirl simulator, but if we don't put either psychic or magic or, I guess, maybe robots into this, no one will touch it.
No. Mm-hmm.
So let's put in the psychics, and we'll put in the 25% chance to be them.
Well, even like bunnies and burrows, where they're like, you're going to be just rabbits. You're just little bunnies, and you're hopping around. Also, this guy's magic.
You know, like, nothing. Yeah. I don't think there's any game that makes me sadder that the creators have passed away than Bunnies and Burrows.
Oh, because you really need to unpack what was going on there.
The oral history of Bunnies and Burrows is one of the most wanted things in my life. I want to be like, so what were you guys hoping? I want their play experience.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a common thing for me whenever I'm reviewing these old games, is I'm like, what was it like when the designer who had this whole idea in his head played this game?
Like, when you sat down to do this, you're like, all right, I have a full vision, and then players got a hold of it. What did they do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, with Bunnies and Burrows, it was like, okay, how do you play this? Every 10 minutes, you roll a random encounter chance. Normally, it's a worm or nothing. Sometimes, it might be a scorpion. And if you want to, you can learn to speak scorpion from talking to the scorpion. But more likely, he'll attack you. But then roll another 10 minutes to see if you find some clover. It was like, who is playing this?
You can play a girl bunny, but you have to stay inside the entire game.
Also, other rabbits might try to steal you away to their burrow.
And you have no agency in this.
One thing that I've noticed, because I've talked to a lot of designers who are still workshopping their design, you know, they're getting ready to market it to people and play test it and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I obviously in this line of work come across a lot of heartbreakers. And the thing that sucks about the modern heartbreaker, like thankfully there's not a big situation where people pour a lot of money into it, but they pour a lot of effort into it. And I often think it's the wrong places because the people who are going out and conceiving of role-playing games, they often have good ideas that are buried underneath ideas that they think they have to get through. They're trying to force their game to be D&D instead of just chasing what their game actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see that in especially the modern ones, like you say, where they go, all right, I have this idea for a game. But because, say, all I've played is D&D or all I've played is Traveler or whatever, they go, well, I'm going to use this game as a baseline and then add my game onto that. And you get the same thing like Cyber World, where like you just took two things and mashed them together and didn't care if they worked or not.
And sometimes that framework, that last vestige of the game that you based it on, is the one thing holding your game back. Like, there's a game I absolutely love. We haven't covered it on the show. It's been mailed to us, and I've read it because I was interested in it, which is called Godbound.
Ooh.
Have you not heard of it? Okay, so Godbound is a D20 supplement that's basically what if Exalted happened during World War II.
Oh, wow, that's neat.
It's really neat. It's got all kinds of amazing stuff happening in it, and it's a D20 game, and the creators describe it as an OSR. Of all the things. To me, that's just the strongest argument out there that OSR is a meaningless internet term.
I mean, well, if people don't want to agree on a central definition, it's all meaningless.
Yes. It's just like GNS to me, where I'm like, all right, sure, this game's totally narrativist. You guys figured it out. But with this case, it's OSR in the sense that it uses old D20 rules, but I feel like the D20 rules are the slowest element of what is the coolest concept. I mean, sure, it does great things with D20, but it is the coolest concept I've seen applied to D20, and I feel like it could do well with its own thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just that concept alone, to me, merited further investigation, but as soon as you said D20, I went, oh, I never want to play this.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It's definitely worth a read. But yeah, it's a D20. It's good old fashioned OSR stuff, sort of. So what do you say we get to some questions? You guys interested?
Oh yeah, let's do this.
All right, James, could you do me a favor? Since you're watching the computer this time, let me know when we get at or near an hour.
Okay, definitely.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to start with questions. I have them divided up into two sections this time, guys. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask one of you a question at a time, and I'll take one for myself every now and then. We're going to start with questions that are for System Mastery. And then I have, because I've been pushing people to do this for months, I have a list of questions for just anyone else.
That's so good.
I love it. And recently we had someone ask on Twitter if they can ask other people questions for us. And yes, we strongly encourage you to do that. Mostly RPG podcasts that have celebrities in them. We want you to bother them. So if Brian Pazan is still doing his D&D one, and if Will Wheaton is still doing his D&D one, make sure you get those things out to Harmontown. Questions for System Mastery, all of them need all of them.
Yeah, if you manage to get the stage with these people, if you see them just walking around in their regular lives, we want you to spend that on finding new questions for System Mastery.
Oh, yeah. You get yourself in front of Paul F. Tompkins, you System Mastery right up into his face.
Yeah.
He's going to be confused and friendly, so so push. All right, so here we go. First question comes to us from Flame Titan. And James, we'll start with you.
Ooh.
Well, D&D just made the National Toy Hall of Fame, if only because Reddit's D&D community discovered it and in a day gave the site more traffic than it probably gets in a year. Do you think D&D deserves to be among the great classics like the Slinky, Hot Wheels, and the Cardboard Box?
I'm going to say this is an easy yes for me. D&D is not the greatest game, but it was the first. It was the first to be a big hit, and it invented a new genre of thing.
Now, I would like to take issue with this.
Ooh.
Because I don't think it's a toy. I don't think it should be on the toy list.
Okay. This is interesting.
What constitutes a toy?
Well,
I always think it's based on the verb. Like, what do you do with D&D?
You play it.
Well, yes, but I can play with anything. I can play with leaves. That doesn't make leaves
a toy. Yeah, but
no one
ever. But that's not the primary operative verb. The first time you see, here's some leaves, you don't think, what do I do with them? Play. You think, I don't rake, enjoy, watch them fall.
So then is a board game a toy, or is it a game? Like, are games toys?
Games are toys because toy manufacturers publish games.
I'm all right with that. I mean, especially older ones. I mean, Mousetrap is in no way not a toy.
Okay, that'll give you, because it's actually a thing that you play with outside of playing the game.
Fireball Island, Dizzy Dinosaur, these are 100% toys.
I mean, also, like, how many games are sold in toy stores?
Well, yeah, it's a toy store that has games in it.
You're just
got a game section. They have dedicated sections exclusively for that.
If there was no such thing as a role-playing game Hall of Fame, what Hall of Fame would you say D&D belongs in?
It would be, I mean, not in a role-playing game, but I'd say a game. I would put games separate from toys.
So you think toys and games are two different libraries?
A toy is something that you just play with, personally, is an object you play with rather than a concept. D&D is a concept you are playing with. It would be like saying tag is a toy.
Would you be okay? Would you be okay if it was a category within the Toy Hall of Fame? Like they have a whole wall of games, and D&D is on that.
Yeah, that would be fine. Like, if they're like, this is our Toy Hall of Fame. Also, things that aren't toys, games, we also have a section. All right,
well, let me ask you a follow up here. Recently, Run DMC was inducted into the Toy Hall of Fame.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, obviously you play with Run DMC, so.
In relation to massive Reddit questions that never go away, one duck-sized horse or 100... No, it's the other way around. One horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses, who wins?
Oh, wait, if they're fighting each other?
Oh, no, usually it's supposed to be who would you rather fight.
But I feel like who wins is its own, like, interesting question.
I think so, too. I think in that case, I give it to the horses, but normally...
Oh, I give it to the duck. Because the duck either flies away, and then that scares the horses, and they die.
Well, what system are we running this in? Because...
Oh, it's a system now. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be percentile-based, because we have 100 horses.
Well, no, I think it's got to be palladium, because we have to deal with size factors. I think we're looking at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and other strangeness.
See, my first instinct was to put this in D&D 3.5, because that's where my brain generally goes when I'm trying to stat out combats. And you're dealing with swarm rules.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Which makes it really, really hard for the duck to deal with because they don't have any AoE attacks.
Well, I think they've got a little bit of blast damage, you know.
Just because ducks have that?
From the butt, is what I'm saying.
See, now, I want to put it in some like extremely crunchy game, like a Phoenix Command or something like that, just so that the fact that a duck size or a horse-sized duck can't possibly fly comes into play.
No, you put it in Champions, and you got to start figuring out the angles of the quack.
All right.
What's the yaw? The yaw.
It can move up to two hex face changes per melee round, going back to the AD&D flight model, because it's a clumsy or Class D flyer. Literally not Jesus says, and John, we'll start with this one for you, especially because this is a very direct at us type question. Yo, I was wondering if you guys looked at foreign role-playing games. Shit outside the Anglosphere, like Tenra Banjo Zero or something.
Well, I mean, we've gotten suggestions to do Tenra Banjo several times.
And we have a copy of it. We'll get to it.
I'm here to suggest it.
Yeah, fair enough.
You should definitely do that.
Yeah. We've only heard good things about it, which is probably why we haven't done it.
It's like our number one rule against it. People love that game. But no, we have done a couple of Japanese games.
Yeah, we've done Maid.
Yeah, and the Dragon Ball Z game we did is technically a Japanese release that was translated. Yeah.
Is it? Was it really?
Yeah. First?
Wow.
Yeah, it's you can tell from the moment you open the book because it's one of those. It's not really a role playing game. Like the role playing game is an afterthought that's tacked into it. It is primarily a one of those fan books. You know, when you see like, oh, here's pictures and information about your favorite characters and how is Goku stronger than Superman? You better believe it. That kind of thing.
Yeah. So I mean, we've done some. The whole limiting factor is it has to be in English for us to be able to do it as well.
Oh, I can tell you, we're getting ready to do a game that was translated over into English from French. It will be in the next two or three games we do. We're going to be doing a game called Nephilim, which is a French role playing game, and I still really want to do Lamentations of the Flame Princess.
Oh yeah. That's one that you guys have to do.
Yeah, that's strong on the list. Although I don't know if that gets us outside the Anglosphere.
Yeah, that's
not
that's
outside
the
Anglosphere.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's actually really difficult to get outside the Anglosphere.
Yeah, there's very few Japanese games.
But there are actually a ton. There are very few that are translated over.
Yeah.
Japanese, like the Japanese role-playing design, I'm going to rant about this for a little bit. They grew up in their own ecosystem. We sent over Dungeons & Dragons, and they looked at that, had a lot of fun with that, and started making their own games. And then video games hit, which sort of crippled the I'm going to make a role-playing game economy because who gives a shit?
Right.
But there are still a couple dozen games that were developed in Japan without any influence from us beyond our original D&D.
Oh, yeah.
So it's sort of like looking at animals in Australia. They just grew up in a completely different environment, and it's totally reasonable that this weasel-like rat creature goes to hop around on its hind legs.
That's a weird description of Golden Sky stories, but yeah. I'm going to allow it.
But man, no, and the player type is different over there because it's rare to accept guests into your home. So they actually design a lot of their games to be played as one shots.
Oh.
Rather than for extended campaign play.
That makes sense. I the one thing I knew about the quirks of Japanese gaming is that the polyhedral dice market never hit there.
Right.
So every game is D6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is incredibly popular. That comes up a lot in Tenra. Man, I hope you guys like talking about D6s.
Well, we've done a few games that have.
But yeah, you guys definitely need to go outside of our sphere because there's fascinating design shit.
We really want to. So we'll start spending some money that direction. Also, when are you guys going to get your fur on and look at Sanguine Production Games? All right. So first of all, we've gotten our fur on a variety of occasions.
Several times.
Most notably in Furry Pirates, which is definitely worth looking into because it straight up has furry in the title and then never... Oh, no, wait. It's the replacement word for man in the book, and that's all it is.
It is just a pirate history book that happens to be like, also, Cromwell was a badger. Anyway, moving on.
It takes 6 furries to operate a cannon, but 5 furries will be required to run the sails.
Good Lord.
Ugh, it's the worst book. But no, we'll totally look. Sanguine Productions, I'm going to mark that down. We'll look into it. The last bit here, again, also 4 editions of a My Little Pony Friendship is Magic role-playing game for free, mind you, that you guys haven't even so much as glanced over. I'm beginning to think System Mastery isn't into the furry movement at all. I suggest you log on to Role-Playing is Magic and rectify this situation.
It's fan
They're
stuff.
Fan games. We're one of the things, one of the tenets of our show is that we are colossal assholes. We don't create anything. All we do is destroy old stuff. And in an attempt to make that okay, we don't destroy things that anyone is still hinging their life on.
Yeah. And at this point, if someone, I mean, back in the first year when we were doing this, someone gave me their Heartbreaker first review, and I was like, we are not going to do that because, one, this is terrible, and, two, we don't want to go on air and be like, this guy's an idiot.
It was D&D with a dog race and a cat race.
Yeah, it was just bad.
We stay away from fan work because fans are still always very heavily invested in it, and it's just not nice.
I'll be like being an art critic and then just going on DeviantArt and shitting on everyone there.
By the way, Deviant Mastery is our next show for sure. Yeah.
It's not what you think.
Finally, P.S. When are one of you assholes going to make role-playing games great again? I don't know, like around 2000. When did Apocalypse World start? We'll just take credit for that.
Around 2020 is when we're going to do that. Once Cyberpunk hits.
When Blipleggers is done, guys.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
All right. Question from Ryan Marshall. This is a nice, serious question. I'm actually going to take this one. How do you feel about the idea of a player having multiple characters and choosing which one to play for each session? It seems like that would go a long way towards solving the problem of sitting out for 3 sessions or doing a time skip when a character gets hurt, without degenerating into the narrative shenanigans of recovering from a gunshot wound overnight. Ryan Marshall, a regular question writer and a known grognard. He's very much on the side of healing time should be real healing time, which is a fair argument. No problem. So I actually do like the idea of playing multiple characters at once. I've always liked doing that. The feeling of having a cold stable and roster is just a chance for more creativity to be like, how does this character that I have interact with this character that my friend has? It's fun. The only thing is it's very prone to power gaming. It can be very easy to be like, all right, who are we bringing this time? The heavy weapon guy, and the sniper, because we know that there's a certain type of alien. But even then, if the DM knows it...
What are you, playing XCOM?
Yeah, I'm playing XCOM, yes. Okay, tell me you wouldn't.
I mean, obviously I would.
There it is. All right, great. So I'm a fan. What do you guys think?
I love it. That's how we ran Shadowrun when I played in college, is everybody had a couple different runners, and you would decide which one you wanted to play in a given evening. The only thing that like sort of made it difficult was every session had to be designed as a one-shot session because... it was too difficult for people to like manage characters across multiple storylines if it didn't finish that whatever story you were telling in a single evening.
So you're welcome to bring your old character back, but you basically have to rebuild them?
Right. It's more that you would be showing up with one of your 3 characters and you don't want to be still embroiled in a story so that you have the option of using them next week.
Yeah, you don't want to be locked into whatever character you were doing
session. I'm stuck in an elevator.
One of my dreams, back when John and I were embroiled in a very long-running 4th edition D&D game, we wanted to build our own mercenary company, and my dream was that once we did that, we'd start playing as the mercenaries, and that we could play as just different mercenaries being sent out by our original PCs, who are now NPCs, on adventures.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that'd be amazing fun.
See, now... for something like Shadowrun and any of the cyberpunk things, I think having the multiple characters is great because one of the biggest failings for me in any of those settings is...
Deckers.
The Deckers or any of the people who are... I specifically interact in the world in one way. Mm-hmm. And if your adventure doesn't have that in it, they're not doing anything.
They've gotten better about that in Shadowrun, especially that video game that's on Steam for it now where like the riggers and deckers control little robots that hang around with you.
Yeah.
That was such a smart move. to be like, all right, you don't always have to be in a cool car. You can have a little drone robot that's useful. All right, so I'm going to move this next question on to James, and there's a reason for that. This question comes to us from Patterhar, and the question is, James D'Amato complimented my System Mastery t-shirt this weekend. Does that make you squeal with delight? If not, why the hell not?
Well, it certainly made me squeal with delight to see that shirt, but I also am in the room with these two, and I see no squealing.
That is true.
No, no.
Not well, a single squeal to be had.
I pre-screened the question, so I got my squealing out of the way before I got on the mic.
I pre-squealed.
Yeah. A pop filter can only do so much, and so I didn't want to squeal out and blow out the system, make it impossible to amplify without clip fixing. It's a lot of work I didn't want.
So earlier when we thought we heard wild hogs outside, that was... okay.
So that's awesome. That's really good news that the shirts are out there in the world. We had one kid listener take a road trip in his System Mastery shirt. He was up in Alaska teaching. He said he was teaching Tlingit kids to play Dr. Magnet Hands.
That's awesome.
It's so good to spread that game around. So that was awesome to hear. If folks are interested in them, of course, the shirts are there. They're at tpublic.com/systemmastery. I think we have 4 or 5 designs right now.
We have 4 or 5 t-shirts left.
So. Get in there and buy them now.
Do it.
They're actually on sale right now if you're interested. They have that Black Friday thing they're doing is extending through the end of like next week or something. So, and you know what? Even when in the far future when people are still listening to this episode, they're probably still on sale because TeePublic is on sale like every 15 minutes.
They're probably still on sale because Black Friday has extended from a day to a week to, I'm sure, what's going to be the entire month. And eventually, we'll just have Black Friday for a year.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And then we'll have to have Black Friday, which is Black Friday again.
Blacker Friday.
Now, there's a role-playing setting. Where it's always Black Friday.
Oh, my gosh. And going to every grocery store, not grocery store, but every like department store and so on is a battle. And there's people in there with like Mad Max-style outfits made out of clothes that are from within, and they're fighting with
people
belts.
People who have been sitting there for weeks trying to get a better deal than the deal that's currently on.
Doorbuster is a prestige class. I'm on board with that. Okay, let's see here. And also I am working on a new shirt design. We have a Donkey Talk shirt in the works.
Finally.
Yeah, so that should happen pretty soon. It's just a little bit of work on that.
You asked for it, you got it.
Yeah, it's coming out. Next question for John. Insert clever name here says, hey, System Mastery, I have a question for you guys. I don't remember if this has been asked already, but I hope not. Anyway, I've always seen date tips for guys to pick up girls with books and or online. However, it occurred to me that you never see any gay men or any for gay men to pick up men with, or for gay women for that matter. So here's my question for you, Jeff or John. I know you guys by your voices because I'm horrible with names. What are some good date and pickup tips for gay men to woo other men? What is the mating ritual? And John, as always, anytime anyone sends us a question about bisexuality, they think it's you.
Yeah,
this guy didn't. We got to give him credit, but I'm just going to keep it as a tradition.
He hedged his bets.
Yeah, let's hear the answer to this question.
Well, from my personal experience, how you do that is to seem very shy. Let the man be in charge who comes up to you. Let him approach you.
Oh yeah, keep your head down. Let him sniff you.
Yeah. You need to turn around and display that you are weaker than he is, and then he'll probably mount you, and then from there you have a special relationship.
Now, I've always heard that in a situation like this, you want to, if you're wearing a jacket or something, hold it up to make yourself appear larger.
Oh, if you're the one doing the courting, yes.
And make noise. You're supposed to make noise, but don't make eye contact with them, because
it's very similar to being a peacock. You display your plumage brightly, and you say, hey, just like a peacock would.
Yeah, you know, exactly like a peacock does.
Yes. Okay. As the bisexual guy from System Mastery, generally speaking, it is a lot easier, which is why you don't need tips. That's the secret, is that whenever you're in a gay club looking to pick up gay men, they are also all there. Gay men are never at a club to dance.
No, that is, like I said, the experience that I've had with that is, don't worry, they'll find you.
Yes, and that's been my experience as a bisexual man as well, is I'm very picky and very passive when it comes to my to the way I find men attractive, and so I mostly just hang around and they show up, and it works, Matt. It works wonders. And if you're not gay or you're not bisexual, I'm real sorry it's so hard for you guys. It is just the worst. You should just try it, what I'm up to, because it is the tits. In fact, the lack of.
And for the gay women in the audience, I can really only speak to the experience of the gay women that I know. But if you're prepared to have conversations about clone troopers, I think you're a shoo-in.
Yeah, 100%.
One of my very best friends is a lesbian, and in my experience, the best way to win her heart is to know a lot about Dragon Age.
Oh, there. Yeah, actually, I feel that's very true.
Yeah,
based on the people that I know, that's 100% true. If you know a lot about Dragon Age, you're in.
If you write fan fiction, done. Yeah. You're in.
Yep. So there you go. Three men tell lesbians how to hit on other lesbians. It's the new show.
New podcast.
It's just what everyone's been waiting for.
Oh, boy, yeah.
All right, let's see. Let's move on to, I guess I'll take this one. Sir Phobos asks, what are your thoughts on doing an episode where you review an adventure module? Aside from the now infamous Tomb of Horrors, Dungeons & Dragons alone has numerous famous and not-so-famous adventures, like Keep on the Borderlands, Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, Castle Ravenloft, and a whole bunch of others. And that doesn't count third-party material like World's Largest Dungeon. Beyond D&D, a lot of publishers that get past the Heartbreaker stage will release adventures that show how they imagine their game to be played, often with amusing assumptions. Oh, I guess I went way past the question. What do we think about doing adventure modules, John?
I am fine with adventure modules as almost like the role-playing equivalent of a board game. I'm not invested so much in the story or the characters as I am in seeing what's going on, how do I play the game, how do I interact with the game. Since modules for me are more attempts to play around with the game system rather than make something interesting in the setting.
Sure enough. Let's ask a listener. Should we do a module episode?
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll probably do that. I'll pick some of my favorites. All those little Greyhawk ones where it turns out the dungeon is a spaceship.
Barrier Peaks,
yeah,
man.
Barrier Peaks
is the shit. You should definitely do that.
100%. I have the Great Modron March, which I think would be a fantastic one to review and talk about. It's endless, and it's all Planescape stuff. Just
you got Menzo Baranzen.
I do have the original second edition Menzo Baranzen box set, which still has the color cards for Drow character sheets that you would use. I don't even want to open it. It's too valuable. All right, moving on here. North Star says, "Dear System Mastery, let's see. Oh, just wanted to say the last few episodes have been great. Okay, thanks. Let's move on to the questions. I'm looking for a good generic system in which to run my games, but I'm finding a problem. When using any given system, I often find that the feel of the system, perhaps the tone set by the mechanics, inevitably creeps in. For example, every time I play Savage Worlds, it always feels campy and pulpy, making horror and high fantasy feel off. And D&D always feels like high fantasy, regardless of what game I try to run. Is it possible to solve this tonal feeling within any system, or should I run certain styles of game in certain systems rather than searching for a single system to use? In other words, if my game already has GURPS all over it, should I stop trying to get the GURPS off?"
Well, you know, if you got GURPS on you, you need to go see a doctor, get the cream for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you see your uncle...
Because that can be fatal if you just leave it.
Yeah.
If you see your uncle GURPS on the roof... I don't know. I mean, there's kind of an age-old push and pull between the idea of narrative mechanics and the ability to work around them. That's why people still come up with new game systems year after year. Because if Dungeons & Dragons or Empire of the Petal Throne had worked as a universal system, we'd just all be playing them now. So there's kind of a pull for, can we make mechanics that better... I mean, granted, look at Apocalypse World, where sex moves are a thing, but or especially Monster Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Monster Hearts is one of the greatest examples out there of how you can redesign the game engine and how games are played to help you tell the story.
Yeah, and that's one of the issues with a lot of universal systems is they have, going into it, assumptions on how you're going to play the game anyway. So, like Savage Worlds, GURPS, things like that, the way the mechanics work, regardless of what you try and set it in, are still going to flavor how you play.
I will say I am a big fan of using a system that is built to do the thing that you want to do. And pretty much like all the systems that you went through, they have their own flavor to them.
Yeah,
Savage Worlds definitely does.
Yeah, and if you don't want flavor in your game, just flip a coin whenever you have to decide something. And if that sounds boring to you, then maybe consider that, yeah, systems are designed with intent. And that intent comes through in the design. So even if you're not intending it to be a crazy, high-powered game, if you're using Feng Shui as your base system, it's going to lean that way.
Absolutely.
So I would tell you to give up on that, because I don't think having a universal system is useful.
Unless it's Fate.
Yeah, but I mean, Fate's got its own thing, man.
It does have a set of quirks to it. The whole thing where you don't really die in Fate, you just make bargains to not die. It has a flavor to it. Savage Worlds, for example, has an incredible amount of flavor to it. It's like trying to play a never-ending math problem.
Well, yeah, even Fate itself has a lot of variations on the base mechanics. And like, okay, this is Fate, but whatever. And so even ones that are super easy to make universal like that, people are still going to go, okay, yeah, but I want the mechanics of this to represent something else.
Yeah, these aren't cooking equipment. I'm not Alton Brown, and I wholeheartedly support the Unitasker, a game that does one thing and does it very well. So that'd be where I'd come from on that. One of my big forays into comics was during the 90s. I had collected Malibu Comics Prototype, Sludge, and really enjoyed CrossGen's Sojourn. What are your favorite obscure comics? I can take this one because I'm ready to go.
Well, yeah, you have those.
Because my personal favorite comics in general are, while universally respected and translated into hundreds of languages around the world, are almost unheard of in the U.S., which are Asterix, Tintin, and Valerian.
Oh, so okay, so the three comics that I learned about in art history.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't count as obscure. That's not obscure at all.
Well, especially now that there are Asterix, Tintin, and Valerian movies.
Yeah.
I feel like I've kind of lost my old indie cred that I had when I was 15 and I was obsessively reading Belgian comics in the original French. But those were my favorites growing up. Other than that, I like to hate read obscure comics.
Oh.
Because I've read more than half of Cerebus.
Oh boy.
And it's the same way I read System Mastery books. I'm just sitting there going, oh, this gets me a good angry. I'm so mad at Dave Sim. Every page is the worst page. All right, well, there you go. Someone else take away.
For me, I'll go with webcomics because I feel webcomics have their own realm of obscurity. I really like the artist Sandra K. Furr. She did a comic called Boy Meets Boy and one called Friendly Hostility. And she did one after that that I haven't caught up on using the same characters. And they're just funny. They're funny and sort of sweet, heartwarming comics. I definitely recommend them.
This is a shot in the dark, but is one of those about ice hockey?
No.
Okay, I'm thinking of something else then. All right, fair enough. John, what you got?
Nothing. I don't really care about most of the indie comics. Whenever I try to read them, and I've gotten books of other indie comics, and it's like, this is a tale of a child growing up dealing with the loss of his dad and abuse, and you're like, okay. And I'll get like halfway through it, and I'm like, I can't do this.
So you keep trying to read comics that aren't really meant to be read, they're just meant to be optioned by Wes Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough.
But, you know, along those, I do like, of course, some of the more non, like, standard of the big titles as well.
Non-Euclidean comics.
Yeah, those non-Euclidean comics. I like anything based on Relea and Cthulhu.
I figured you were just building up your opportunity to go to bat for Carnage yet
again. I will go
to
bat for Carnage all day, every day. I bought a trade paperback today of some Carnage, and I saw that he has a series out right now. I was super excited about that. The Carnage one-shots that they had way back in the 90s, Mind Bomb and It's a Wonderful Life, both amazing. Absolutely love them. Recommend that. I think Carnage is a very complex character that is a lot of people are very reductive about him.
He's like Venom, but different.
Use a sentence to describe Carnage that doesn't include the word murder or murderer.
Well, he is both of those, but that's not all he is. And yet,
he's also a weird goop monster. And I really want to. I've got a pitch for Marvel. It's a Carnage solo series that really
it
explores the goop monster.
I literally
God
do.
Damn it.
An ongoing. It is a storyline, a Spider-Man storyline.
Okay.
Where the Carnage symbiote is. Ends up getting separated from Cletus Kasady.
Mm-hmm.
So Cletus is still in prison, but the symbiote is attaching to people and driving them insane and having them murder people.
Right.
And so Spider-Man has to essentially do Silence of the Lambs with Cletus Kasady in order to find the symbiote.
Yeah. I would read that.
Yeah that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, you know what? Suck it.
Yeah. No, you got me. From the moment I said, I was like, oh, he's going to do a Silence of the Lambs thing. He's going to he's going to do a Hannibal Kasady. I'm all right with that.
That's good.
Cletus Lecter, which one did you prefer?
I like Hannibal Kasady.
All right, we're going to split these up a little bit. I've got a question for me here. I didn't notice that he had a question for anyone. Jeff, what is the ideal kind of home-baked bread to pair with pork shoulder? I'm going to go with a kind of a rosemary French bread, because you're going to want something that's thick and can be cut hearty. Pork shoulder needs to be cooked for a long time to be tender and palatable, which means you're going to end up with juices, you're going to end up with gravies, you're going to want something that can dip and something that can support, something that's got a lot of firmness and architecture to it.
Structural yeah. integrity.
You do. You want a firm, crusty bread. So I'm going to say a rosemary French.
Anyone? All right.
Yeah? All right.
Can't great. Argue with that.
Yeah.
Cornbread.
Cornbread would work, yeah. All right, let's see. Let's start with how many more of these do we have? Where are we at?
Oh, you're fine. You got another 15 minutes at least.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Dear Steve, we'll start with one of the questions for other people. And this is a person I have no idea who this is. Mm-hmm. Dear Steve Weatherford, I have been following a strict workout routine in the gym 4 to 5 days a week with one muscle group each day and cardio every day, as well as a restricted diet, high fat, high protein, low carb. I've seen a real plateau with my gains. Anything you can suggest to kickstart things?
Yeah. I've got it right here. Drop your whole workout routine. What you're going to do is start doing parkour. Ignore all that sissy weightlifting garbage. It's not going to do anything for you, because what are you doing with that muscle right now? What are those gains for? For you to look at in the mirror when you're regretting your choices in life? No, you're going to learn parkour, and then you're going to start dispensing vigilante justice after you pick up some MMA. I want to see you on the streets beating criminals within an inch of their life to work through your parental issues.
Also, explore that urban landscape, man.
Yeah.
You're going to find yourself flipping your way up a parking garage. That is so cool.
Yeah. Parkour.
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 That's John's character. We did some playtest testing a while back. We're thinking about doing an actual play Gamma World.
Oh, man.
I got 7th edition Gamma World. And John's character for it.
I got Android and Cryokinetic. So I have a fridge. That is a refrigerator that
yeah.
is one of those refrigerators that has like connected to the internet and it can talk to you.
Of course.
Yeah. And I also randomly rolled for the skill that I'm really good at is acrobatics. So my fridge will engage parkour mode and just go parkour.
And just flip around. That is the best thing about that game, is the random roll of what skills you have. So anyway, watch
also,
for that.
He's basically Mr. Freeze, as he continually says, "It's ice to meet you."
Hello, humans. Would you like a beverage?
Greeting, humans.
Yeah.
Please taste my frosty beverage.
I don't know. That was an actual play game, podcast we were working on for a while. We'll see if we can get it done. Really, we just need players and time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy, do you need time.
Yeah. All right. So we'll move on here. Jeff and John, this comes to us from Patrick. Patrick says, in one of your recent podcasts, this is just a letter for us. We did a thing where I said, hey, everybody. Who is actually a Movie Mastery fan that doesn't listen to System Mastery? And we got about three people. I picked one of them, Patrick, who was like, yeah, I heard about you guys from someone else. And Movie Mastery is a real thing that people find on their own. I was amazed. I thought it was just a just a growth that System Mastery had developed.
A that's benign growth.
That's what I get for letting John host something.
Yeah.
All right. But thanks, Patrick. It was good to know that we have actual Movie Mastery exclusive listeners. Although, really, why aren't you into role-playing games, buddy?
Yeah, dude. Come on.
They're the new cool.
If you like movies, you like stories. And if you like stories, check out role-playing
games.
And
don't you like Satan?
Yeah.
And if you like Satan, check out Satanic Panic.
Think about it this way. If your elf dies, you die. Isn't that a risk structure you want to get into? Okay, this one comes to us from DeJesser. I have no idea how to pronounce that. Maybe the J is silent. Jaser. Greetings, Jeff and John, who I can tell apart because John sounds more goofy.
That is true. 100% accurate.
Mm. I can't believe I sound serious. I recently put together a Savage Worlds one-shot where the party is time-traveling robots, and Timmy, a 12-year-old who thinks robots are swell, sent back to the 1950s in order to prevent World War III from happening.
Liking that.
I like this a lot. The big rule of the game is that if you disrupt the timeline, kill someone or start a panic, you start causing temporal anomalies. For example, one of the robots has a nuclear bomb with "Do Not Use" written on it, and if they set it off, a temporal rift drops a rampaging T-Rex in the middle of town. My first question is, can you think of other fun time shenanigans that don't necessarily punish players for playing the game?
Most of the time shenanigans I can think of any of the games that we've reviewed are mostly either completely ignored, it's just you go to this time and you can do whatever you want, or it's continuum, and anything you do, you have to have your notebook ready so you know you have to do that in the future or prevent something from happening in the past.
I'm gonna make a suggestion for an adventure setting for your game, and that's going to be a butterfly sanctuary and preserve.
Ooh,
yeah.
Man.
So your characters have to be desperately careful not to kill any of these butterflies, because, of course, chaos theory and the ripple effect is entirely based on butterflies.
Yeah,
and
literally only butterflies.
On reality, yeah.
Yeah, it's only butterflies. That example that people always use about how chaos theory works isn't an example. It's just the whole of the thing. All chaos theory occurs when butterflies are messed with. So you have players fighting in a butterfly sanctuary, and of course there's nectar that can be spilled on them that causes more butterflies to get near them. And if a butterfly gets squashed, a horrible, crazy thing occurs, like someone in your party is replaced with Nixon or, I don't know, Aquaman.
Or both.
Nixoman. Aqua-Nixon.
Man, if Nixon had the powers of Aquaman, I can only imagine the terrifying fascist state we'd be living in today.
The horrors unleashed upon us.
I've been led to understand that certain dolphins are communists.
If the American people want seafood, they can go through me.
So, butterfly sanctuary, and any time a butterfly is accidentally swatted, which of course occurs any time you hit someone or are hit yourself, a crazy new time travel thing occurs.
I would suggest for inspiration reading Time Watch by Kevin Culp. It is a gumshoe system. And the point of it was to incorporate as many of those weird paradox anomaly things into the inherent design of the system as possible. Like, there's an ability that allows you to, when you're low health, tag out with a future version of yourself that's fully healed. It's just a bunch of stupid, stupid nonsense. And I think it works really, really great as a game. And you can flip through that book and bring back to whatever session that you're playing in to go, oh yeah, your new enemy that you created is a sentient language because you messed up and caused a paradox. So deal with that.
All right. We're going to move on to Omnicrom, the nowhere man who asks, dear two-headed ogre mage Jeff and John, since you didn't answer my third question in Afterthought 44 for lack of time, I wish to ask it again. My question was my obligatory giant robot-related question. If you were piloting a giant robot, would you prefer your melee weapon to be a wrench with chainsaw blades concealed in the vise, a huge mace with a pile driver hidden in the head, or two pairs of superheated axes you could quadruple wield with your robot's hidden extra arms?
Oh, God, I'm sorry. We're out of time.
Yeah. But we had time to ask the question, which means we're never going to do that again.
It's been asked, so sorry, we're done.
I think all those weapons are inventive, but I feel like each one of us could probably come up with a giant robot weapon we just prefer in general.
Well, the thing is, I was immediately going to go to the axes, because what I want is a robot that is a giant robot with extra arms, because I want Crimson Typhoon.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
all I want in life.
And I, of course, want a giant screw. That's always what I want with my giant robots.
Yeah, you do.
No, I just like screws. Anyway, it just keeps getting better.
Look, I just like the turning of the screw.
We're going to get to your other question another time, Omnicrom, the one about rifts. Just so you know, the how many pole arms can you name question, I would again ask you to refer to the intro of this episode,
mm-hmm.
by all means. And final question from you was boxers or briefs? Let's just sound off, boxers.
Boxer briefs.
Boxers.
There we are. Okay, let's see. Let's move. I don't know how much time we have left.
Oh, you got 10 minutes. You're fine.
Oh, we're good. Okay, good.
I made, that was just to take that away from him.
No, that's
fine. I just
fine.
Want to remove everything from
okay.
him.
Okay, question for Nicodemus T. Cheese says, best and worst old... I just changed his name again. This guy was the first person to ever send us an afterthought question, and we've been messing with his name every single time. best and worst old CGI cartoons. So specifically CGI. So best and worst.
Okay.
I'm just going to go around the room and admit that the best CGI cartoon ever is Reboot, and still is.
It's 100% Reboot. That last season of Reboot where Enzo gets trapped in basically Mortal Kombat the game and stays there for years and comes back as a grown man who's been living in games, and he's just like a grizzled badass. Amazing.
Now, I am willing to accept that you might have a completely different answer. You can dark horse this.
I'm going to say Beast Wars after the art style change.
So Beast Wars Primal.
Beast Wars Primal.
Okay.
Loved the animation Beast Wars Primal.
All right.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Great. So what was your least favorite there,
My
Jeff?
Least favorite was Beast Wars in general.
Ooh, Beast Wars Primal, baby.
I'm fine with having a disagreement of opinion. I'm a huge fan of old school Transformers,
mm-hmm.
and so those Beast Wars, and even the Transformers regular that was still CGI.
It's impossible to keep in continuity, for sure.
The continuity isn't really the issue for me. It's the lack of interesting... It's like they're fighting over nothing. They're just like some meaningless asteroid. There's never humans. The backgrounds are all just blurry nothing.
Well, yes. I mean, and that's original Beast Wars. Beast Wars Primal takes place on Cybertron. They go back to Cybertron, and Optimus Prime gets betrayed by his second in command, who is, like, his most loyal confidant throughout the entirety of Beast Wars. It's fantastic.
Well, there you go. That's enough argument for me to...
Honestly, anything with Waspinator, I'm on board with, so...
And, you know, I'm on Team Scorponok, so sure. But John, what are you going to say? Worst?
Worst is definitely the Crash Test Dummies cartoon that they had.
Ooh, that good pull.
That was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, what was the Xavier Renegade Angel one? Did you want to throw that a best or a worst? Because that was probably the most recent adult
one. I mean, I'm
going
to throw
one.
An honorable mention at the Starship Troopers cartoon.
Yeah,
ooh,
yeah. Got all right, going for
fair
that
enough.
One.
All right, let's see. Another comics question from someone whose name was Numbers, so I just wrote down some numbers.
some numbers.
It was a bunch of nines. What is the best dumb thing that has happened in comics?
Ooh,
best
man.
Dumb thing.
The best dumb thing in comics was obviously Maximum Carnage.
Yeah, I know.
And let's see.
Most dumb things in comics are the worst dumb thing in comics. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like anything Dave Sim wrote.
I'm
screw you, Dave Sim. All right.
Let's see. Best dumb thing in comics is I'm going to go with the original Secret Wars.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good pull for that.
It is it's a great story. It was very weird for the time and actually had some lasting effect on the storyline. It's where we get the symbiote costume from. They ended up leaving some people there on the planet, and that changed how the team was working when they went back to Earth.
It was the first time that we realized that Colossus is just a big, dumb baby idiot.
Obviously.
Yeah. Really great arc for Dr. Doom.
Yeah, very good.
Iconic
Dr. Doom art.
The fact that he gets that sort of godlike power.
Mastery
and
over Galactus.
He's like, I don't even care anymore. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just sort of at peace with things. Sort of the opposite of a Thanos, where he gets ultimate power and then goes, I don't want it. That is dumb.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to go with the Exiles run up until the death of Morph.
Okay.
Because it was so amazing that they managed to make Morph, basically just an Animaniac / Freakazoid style cartoon character, into a serious character that mattered.
Oh, yeah. He was very much like the heart of that team until he was gone.
Yeah. So Exiles run up until Morph, and then Exiles in general wouldn't be the best dumb thing in comics. It's just the best thing in comics up until they gave it to, was it Claremont?
Yeah, they gave it to Claremont, and then he just decided he was going to do his favorite X-Men, and it was just about them now.
They might as well just give it to Jim Starlin and let him put all of his Thanos and people into it. All right, let's see here.
Oh, and I have to say, yes, the Spectre. It's the Spectre. The Spectre is the best dumb thing in comics. He is the second notable character created by the person who created Superman. And what was it? A vengeful godlike being that just punished criminals in like the worst, most horror movie ways.
Oh yeah, it's like if Ghost Rider was omnipotent.
Yes, it's perfect. And he wears green panties for no goddamn reason. It's
Have you seen the one cartoon of him that there is out there? There's a DC short. It's all 70s Hollywood.
If you haven't, do yourself a favor and look that up. And all those little animations were pretty great.
Yeah, they called them DC, of course. DC Showcase. And there's a couple of Green Arrow ones. They are very much worth checking out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Let's get to some questions for other people entirely.
Oh, please.
All right. So to anybody, dear Secretariat, I am a horse just like you. I like to watch racing, and you are my favorite racer. When I grow up, I want to be just like you. And I think I'm on the right track. Get it? Track? Because horses run on tracks, and you are a horse, and I am a horse. Do you get it? Do you get my joke about the track? My question is, I am a good kid, and I like to play, and I like to go to school, but sometimes I get sad. What do you do when you get sad? How do you not be sad? Sincerely, Bojack.
Stop placing so much importance on your relationships with other people. You really need to work on yourself and your own identity before you can get validation from other people.
Yeah, and spend less time trying to win over your parents.
Oh, my God. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Ultimately, you're going to hit a point in your life where there are more than five people in a relationship with you, where you have a whole wide range of people to choose who to spend your energy and your time with. It's not going to just be your sister, brother, and parents. It's going to be everyone you meet. And at that point, you're going to realize how much time you wasted in your life trying to befriend people that, at most, you only need to be charitable to in the rest of your life, unless you happen to love your parents, in which case you get to keep loving them.
If you look around and there are people who you've done terrible things to but are still hanging around with you, maybe that person is worthwhile investing some care into.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I got the joke.
Yeah,
it's good.
We should let them know we got the joke about the track.
Track was good.
All right. Dear Conan, what is best in life? As a well-regarded comedian, writer, producer, show host, and king of Aquilonia, I am sure you will have new and interesting insights into this age-old question.
Well, what is best in life is obviously growing a beard, having Andy Richter with me.
And the masturbating bear.
I don't think Conan ever grew a beard.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a beard.
When he turns into old Conan.
Yeah, but that was when he was unhappy.
That was what is worst in life, is the whole Team Coco period. let's see, what is best in life? Well, I'm pretty sure it's to hear the lamentations of Jay Leno.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. And to see the E-Network driven before you.
I would say slaying dark sorcerers.
Yeah,
really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say ripping evil artifacts from the depths of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Clips, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, I think Paul Rudd might have sent us a clip.
Excellent.
And we're back.
Excellent.
Every time. Every time we let him send us these, and
he always says it's going to be not that,
and it is, and I just feel like he should be ashamed of himself. This is I can't even. Right, we're going to move on. Dear Alan Moore, you've publicly stated your disdain for attempts to turn Watchmen into a film. No worries, this is not a Zack Snyder fanboy gotcha. God, could there even still be one of those at this point?
Boy.
I'm actually wondering what your thoughts are on doing real-to-the-source-material cosplay of my favorite characters in the Watchmen universe. I've already got Ozzy and Silk Spectre down, but I'm having trouble getting the right dong paint for my Dr. Manhattan. And so any brands, mixing tips, or other recommendations are most welcome. Also, I've tried several times to use my daily phone call from prison, where I'm awaiting charges for public indecency, but you always let it go to voicemail. Help a brother out. Yours, Pawn Dreams.
All right. Well, obviously,
as Alan Moore,
what you need to do is find the greatest of Beatles. Now, you're going to smash him up while you're lighting candles in your pentagram. Now, you'll be calling out to the great old gods and use your mystic ways to mash the beetle into a bluish paint. Now, once you've got that bluish paint down, you're going to get some nice undertones when you're getting that in you. You just get the nice softest brush for your dong.
You just need one of those makeup removers and you're just gonna blot that in.
You gotta dab.
All right,
I believe you have time for one more question.
Okay, do we want one for I'm gonna give you two options here.
Two.
Dan Savage, known sex article writer, sex advice columnist, Dan Savage, or Lord Baden-Powell, founder of the American Boy Scouts.
Man, I love both of those. I have been told by several different people that they think my voice sounds similar to Dan Savage's, which I disagree with. So I have to go with founder of the Boy Scouts.
Founder of the Boy Scouts. That's a nice short question, too. Dear Lord Baden-Powell, there should be an RPG merit badge. What are the requirements? Rikotma.
Going to have to push back against that. RPGs are sinful, and they're against everything the Boy Scouts stand for, which is, wholesome child soldierishness.
Let me tell you. Speaking as Lord Baden-Powell, or at least as someone who has read the entire...
You're definitely the closest.
I'm an Eagle Scout, and I've actually read the whole handbook a couple of times, including some of the old handbooks. We'll just get on a little Baden-Powell accent. As a founder of the Boy Scouts, I find that the vast majority of Boy Scout time should be taken up with rolling up your pant legs so you can stand in streams and move rocks back and forth between boys until you're right good and sweaty. At that time, you're going to want to catch a salmon, look him clean in the eye, and then cut his head away. You're going to take life from him, and you're going to get a merit badge for that. Merit badges, bah, they're useless. All founded after I was killed. What I believe boys should get is a badge for joining the army, and then the Boy Scouts. Or in the other order. I'm Lord Baden-Powell.
Man, I do like the idea of having been in the army. Being a veteran is a prerequisite for being a Boy Scout.
You don't mess around. You come correct when you're in the Boy Scouts.
Okay. So that's my pitch for a time-traveling role-playing game where he goes around and collects history's greatest soldiers and inducts them into the Boy Scouts, a super group of people who go throughout time solving various crises.
And then every single time there's some joke about how they're not Boy Scouts. And it's like, oh, this isn't the Boy Scouts, men. We're men. And they're like, oh, no, wait, this is the Boy Scouts.
This is the Boy Scouts.
We're all wearing polyester above-the-knee shorts and sashes.
Every episode, it's in the contract.
Every single one.
I just want to pick the people who I want to see in that dumb outfit. Like Rutger Hauer in a good old-fashioned little Boy Scout outfit. 15 merit badges on his baldric.
Alexander the Great is my pick for Boy Scout.
Ooh, yeah. I guess we're going all the way through history. That's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's why it's the time traveler thing.
I'm just going to pick famous Alexanders then. I'm going to say we're going to have Alexander the Great and Alexander Dumas. Yeah. Dumas and Hamilton.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. All right. You don't want one? You don't want. How about the famous otter, Alexander the Grape?
Yes. Obviously, Alexander the Grape.
Ah, but was he in the military?
I don't know.
He looks like he's part of the Senate more than he would actually be in the legions.
You're absolutely right. All right, so I guess that'll be our last question for the week. If you didn't hear your question answered,
it's probably because it was terrible.
Assume that.
John, give him the bad news so I can soften him up. No, we just ran out of time. We'll do more questions next time. Of course, before I get into the real ending here, I want to thank our special guest, James, again from One Shot and Campaign Podcast. Why don't you tell them all about those? Get your plug in.
Yeah, if you guys like role-playing games and you should listening to Afterthought, check out One Shot. We play one-shots of various different role-playing systems, including some of the games that were requested for these two knuckleheads to review. So you can get your fill of those games by listening to me. You can also listen to the Campaign Podcast, where we do an ongoing actual play of Star Wars Edge of the Empire. And our network is also expanding into the world of Twitch. So follow us at twitch.tv/oneshotrpg for more gaming goodness. And thank you guys so much for having me on. It's always a blast hanging out with you.
Oh, yeah. This is the best. This is the first time we've ever hung out in person.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm guessing since this episode will drop tomorrow or Monday, it's going to come out before...
Before your appearance on One Shot.
Yes, that's right. That's why we're here. We drove up to L.A. to meet James here while he's on vacation so we could record an episode of One Shot, which would be your first chance to hear us doing actual play with the One Shot people, or just with James in this case.
Yeah, and boy, what a fun episode we had. I think the setting elements that we came up with in that very much excused the fact that we barely engaged with the system and what was given to us. But not only these two wonderful people, but we were joined by John Rogers, who you might know as the showrunner for Leverage and The Librarians, and the creator of Jackie Chan Adventures, the cartoon. So I think we had a great time, and it's going to be a classic episode. I cannot wait to put it out there.
So that'll be coming soon, so look forward to that. Otherwise, you can always find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com. System Mastery, if you'd like to contact us on Facebook, Gmail, or Twitter, or r/SystemMastery. We've got our own little subreddit now. You can come in there. Great place to ask your Afterthought questions because it's organized and it's easy for us to find them. They get lost so fast when they're tweets. So by all means, if you don't want to do a subreddit thing, if you're one of those I hate Reddit people, then instead just send us an email. That's the second easiest way to get a hold of us,
or track them down.
Oh,
they're
yeah,
not
find
hard
us.
To find.
Yeah, our addresses are as follows. Anyway,
look, if you find us,
you're not going to put a clip in there.
You find us, you get to ask us a question, and you get some cobbler. So,
and that's true.
If you corner one of them, they have to grant you a wish.
That is true. It's going to be terrible. It'll be whatever we can do
instead.
I mean,
it's going to be some monkey's paw stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, you do get the wish.
It's going to be a Black Mirror situation. But you
we're
going
to be terrible in a third season?
Oh, the Netflix budget. All right. So,
shots fired.
Otherwise, if you'd like to support us, do so at patreon.com/systemmastery. That's the best way to get not only bonus episodes of our System Mastery content, but also the RSS feed where you can listen to all of our shows all in one convenient location, including that weird pustulant growth of Movie Mastery, whatever that's all about. So thanks so much for listening, and until next time, you have a great week.